Chapter 5. Elias Tate, throwing himself down on a heap of Ribus's dirty clothes, said, "Do you have any real coffee? Not that joke stuff the mothership peddles to you," he grimaced.
"I have some," Ribus said, "but I don't know where it is."
"Have you been throwing up frequently?" Elias said to her, eyeing her. "Every day or so?"
"Yes."
She glanced at Herb Asher, amazed. "You're pregnant," Elias Tate said.
"I'm in chemo," Ribus said angrily, her face dark red with fury. "I'm heaving up my guts because of the goddamn neurotoxite and the prednoferic."
"Consult your computer terminal," Elias said. There was silence.
"Who are you?" Herb Asher said.
"A wild beggar," Elias said.
"Why do you know so much about me?" Ribus said.
Elias said, "I came to be with you. I'll be with you from now on. Consult your terminal."
Seating herself at her computer terminal, Ribus placed her arm in the MED slot.
"I hate to put it to you this way," she said to Elias and Herb Asher, "but I'm a virgin."
"Get out of here," Herb Asher said quietly to the old man. "Wait until MED gives you the test result," Elias said.
Tears filled Ribus's eyes.
"Shit. This is just terrible. I have MS and then now this. As if MS isn't enough."
To Herb Asher, Elias said,
"She must return to Earth. The authorities will permit it. Her illness will be sufficient legal cause."
To the computer terminal, which had now locked onto the MED channel, Ribus said brokenly,
"Am I pregnant?"
Silence. The terminal said,
"You are 3 months pregnant, Ms. Rami."
Rising, Ribus walked to the port of the dome and stared fixedly out at the methane panorama. No one spoke.
"It's Yah, isn't it?"
Ribus said presently.
"Yes," Elias said.
"This was planned out a long time ago," Ribus said.
"Yes," Elias said.
"And my MS is so there is a legal pretext for me to return to Earth."
"To get you past immigration," Elias said.
Ribus said,
"And you know all about it."
She pointed at Herb Asher.
"He's going to say he's the father."
"He will," Elias said, "and he will go with you. So will I. You'll be checking in at Bethesda Naval Hospital at Chevy Chase. We'll go by emergency axial flight, high-velocity flight, because of the seriousness of your physical condition. We should start as soon as possible. You already have the papers in your possession, the necessary legal papers requesting a transfer back home."
"Yeah. Made me sick,"
Ribus said. After a pause, Elias nodded.
"What is this?" Ribus said furiously. "A coup of some kind? You're going to smuggle?"
Interrupting her, Elias said in a low, harsh voice, "The Roman tenth for tensis."
"Masada," Ribus said. 73 CE, right?
"I thought so.
I started thinking so when a Clem told me about the mountain deity at our Station 5.
"He lost," Elias said. "The 10th Legion was made up of 15,000 experienced soldiers. But Masada held out for almost 2 years, and there were less than 1,000 Jews at Masada, including women and children."
To Herb Asher, Ribus said,
"Only 7 women and children survived the fall of Masada. It was a Jewish fortress. They had hidden in a water conduit."
To Elias Tate, she said,
"And Yahweh was driven from the earth."
"And the hopes of man," Elias said, "faded away."
Herb Asher said,
"What are you two talking about?"
"A fiasco," Elias Tate said briefly. "So he, Yah, first makes me sick, and then he..."
She broke off.
Did he start out from this star system originally, or was he driven here?
He was driven here, Elias said. There is a zone around Earth now, a zone of evil. It keeps him out.
The Lord? Ribas said. The Lord is kept out? Away from Earth?
She stared at Elias Tate. The people of Earth do not know, Elias Tate said. But you know, Herb Asher said. Right? How do you know all these things? How do you know so much? Who are you? Elias Tate said, My name is Elijah.
The three of them sat together drinking tea. Ribas' face had an embittered, stark expression on it, a look of fury. She said almost nothing.
What bothers you the most? Elias Tate said. The fact that Yah was driven off Earth? That he was defeated by the adversary? Or that you have to go back to Earth, carrying him inside you?
She laughed.
Leaving my station.
You have been honored, Elias said.
Honored with illness, Ribas said.
Her hand shook as she lifted her cup to her lips.
Do you realize who it is that you carry in your womb? Elias said.
Sure,
Ribas said.
You are not impressed?
I had my life all planned out.
I think you're taking a small view of this, Herb Asher said.
Both Elias and Ribas glanced at him with distaste, as if he had intruded.
Maybe I don't understand, he said weakly.
Reaching out her hand, Ribas patted him.
It's okay. I don't understand either. Why me? I asked that when I came down with the MS. Why the hell me? Why the hell you? You have to leave your station, too, and your Fox tapes, and lying all day and night in your bunk doing nothing with your gear on auto? Christ. Well, I guess Job had it right. God afflicts those he loves.
The three of us will travel to Earth, Elias said, and there you will give birth to your son, Emmanuel. Yah planned this at the beginning of the age, before the defeat at Masada, before the fall of the temple. He foresaw his defeat and moved to rectify the situation. God can be defeated, but only temporarily. With God, the remedy is greater than the malady.
Felix culpa,
Ribas said.
Yes, Elias agreed.
To Herb Asher, he explained, it means happy fault, referring to the fall, the original fall.
Had there been no fall, perhaps there would have been no incarnation, no birth of Christ.
Catholic doctrine,
Ribas said remotely.
I never thought it would apply to me, personally.
Herb Asher said, But didn't Christ conquer the forces of evil? He said, I have overcome the world.
Well, apparently he was wrong.
When Masada fell, all was lost. God did not enter history in the first century CE. He left history. Christ's mission was a failure.
You are very old,
Ribas said.
How old are you, Elias?
Almost 4,000 years, I guess. You can take a long-term view, but I can't.
You've known this about the First Advent all this time? For 2,000 years?
As God foresaw the original fall, Elias said, he also foresaw that Jesus would not be acceptable. It was known to God before it happened.
What does he know about this now?
Ribas said.
What we are going to do.
Elias was silent.
He doesn't know,
Ribas said.
This,
Elias hesitated.
The final battle.
Ribas said.
It could go either way, couldn't it?
In the end, God wins. He has absolute foresight.
He can know, Ribas said. But does that mean he can... Oh, look, I really don't feel well. It's late, and I'm sick, and I'm worn out, and I feel as if," she gestured, "I'm a virgin, and I'm pregnant. The immigration doctors will never believe it."
Herb Asher said, "I think that's the point. That's why I'm supposed to marry you and come along."
"I'm not going to marry you. I don't even know you."
She stared at him.
"Are you kidding? Marry you? I've got MS and I'm pregnant. Damn it. Both of you, go away and leave me alone. I mean it. Why didn't I take that bottle of Secanax when I had the chance? I never had the chance. Yah was watching. He sees even the fallen sparrow. I forgot."
"Do you have any whiskey?" Herb Asher said.
"Oh, fine," Ribas said bitterly. "You can get drunk, but can I? With MS and some kind of baby inside me? There I was,"
she glared hatefully at Elias Tate,
"picking up your thoughts visually on my TV set, and I imagined in my deluded folly that it was a corny soap opera dreamed up by writers at Formelhaut. Pure fiction. Arachnids were going to decapitate you? Is that what your unconscious fantasies consist of? And you're Yahweh's spokesperson?"
She blanched.
"I spoke the sacred name. Sorry."
"Christians speak it all the time," Elias said.
Ribas said,
"But I'm a Jew. I would be a Jew. That's what got me into this. If I was a Gentile, Yah wouldn't have picked me. If I'd ever been laid, I'd..."
She broke off.
"The divine machinery has a peculiar brutality to it," she finished. "It isn't romantic. It's cruel. It really is."
"Because there is so much at stake," Elias said.
"What is at stake?"
Ribas said.
"The universe exists because Yah remembers it," Elias said.
Both Herb Asher and Ribas stared at him.
"If Yah forgets, the universe ceases."
"Can he forget?"
Ribas said.
"He has yet to forget," Elias said elliptically.
"Meaning he could forget. Then that's what this is about. You just spelled it out. I see.
Well," she shrugged and then reflexively sipped at her cup of tea.
"Then I wouldn't exist in the first place except for Yah. Nothing would exist."
Elias said, "His name means he brings into existence whatever exists, including evil?"
Herb Asher asked.
"It says in Scripture," Elias said, "thus, so that men from the rising and the setting sun may know that there is none but I. I am the Lord, there is no other. I make the light, I create darkness, author alike of prosperity and trouble. I, the Lord, do all these things."
"Where does it say that?"
"Isaiah 45.
"Prosperity and trouble,"
Ribas echoed.
"Weal and woe."
"Then you know the passage," Elias regarded her.
"It's hard to believe."
"It is monotheism," Elias said harshly.
"Yes, I guess it is. But it's brutal. What's happening to me is brutal, and there's more ahead. I want out, and I can't get out. Nobody asked me originally. Nobody is asking me now. Yah foresees what lies ahead, but I don't, except that there's more cruelty and pain and throwing up. Serving God seems to mean throwing up and shooting yourself with a needle every day. I am a diseased rat in a kind of cage. That's what he's made me into. I have no faith and no hope, and he has no love, only power. God is a symptom of power, nothing else. To hell with it. I give up. I don't care. I'll do what I have to, but it will kill me, and I know it. Okay?"
The two men were silent. They did not look at her or at each other. Herb Asher said finally, "He saved your life tonight. He sent me over here."
"That and 5 cred pops will get you a cuppy of cough," Ribas said. "He gave me the illness in the first place."
"And he's guiding you through," Herb said.
"To what end?"
"To emancipate an infinitude of lives," Elias said.
"Egypt," she said, "and the brickmakers, over and over again. Why doesn't the emancipation last? Why does it fade out? Isn't there any final resolution?"
"This," Elias said, "is that final resolution."
"I am not one of the emancipated," Ribas said. "I fell along the way."
"Not yet," Elias said.
"But it's coming."
"Perhaps." The expression on Elias Tate's face could not be read. As the three of them sat, there came a low, murmuring voice which said, "Ribas, Ribas." Ribas gave a muffled cry and looked around her. "Fear not," the voice said. "You will live on in your son. You cannot now die, nor even unto the end of the age." Silently, her face buried in her hands, Ribas began to cry. Late in the day, when school had ended, Emmanuel decided to try the hermetic transform once again, so that he would know the world around him. First, he speeded up his internal biological clock so that his thoughts raced faster and faster. He felt himself rushing down the tunnel of linear time until his rate of movement along that axis was enormous. First, therefore, he saw vague floating colors, and then he suddenly encountered the Watcher, which is to say, the Grygon, who barred the way between the lower and upper realms. The Grygon presented itself to him as a nude female torso that he could reach out and touch, so close was it. Beyond this point, he began to travel at the rate of the upper realm, so that the lower realm ceased to be something but became instead a process. It evolved in accretional layers at a rate of 31.5 million to 1 in terms of the upper realm's timescale. Thereupon, he saw the lower realm, not as a place, but as transparent pictures permutating at immense velocity. These pictures were the forms outside of space being fed into the lower realm to become reality. He was one step away now from the hermetic transform. The final picture froze, and time ceased for him. With his eyes shut, he could still see the room around him. The flight had ended. He had eluded that which pursued him. That meant that his neural firing was perfect, and his pineal body registered the presence of light carried up its branch of the optic conduit. He sat for a little while, although little while no longer signified anything. Then, by degrees, the transform took place. He saw outside him the pattern, the print of his own brain. He was within a world made up of his brain, with living information carried here and there like little rivers of shining red that were alive. He could reach out, therefore, and touch his own thoughts in their original nature before they became thoughts. The room was filled with their fire, and immense spaces stretched out, the volume of his own brain external to him. Meanwhile, he introjected the outer world so that he contained it within him. He now had the universe inside him and his own brain outside, everywhere. His brain extended into the vast spaces, far larger than the universe had been. Therefore, he knew the extent of all things that were himself, and because he had incorporated the world, he knew it and controlled it. He soothed himself and relaxed, and then could see the outlines of the room, the coffee table, a chair,
Walls, pictures on the walls. The ghost of the external universe lingering outside him. Presently, he picked up a book from the table and opened it. Inside the book he found, written there, his own thoughts, now in a printed form. The printed thoughts lay arranged along the time axis which had become spatial, and the only axis along which motion was possible. He could see, as in a hologram, the different ages of his thoughts, the most recent ones being closest to the surface, the older ones lower and deeper in many successive layers. He regarded the world outside him, which now had become reduced to spare geometric shapes, squares mostly, and the golden rectangle as a doorway. Nothing moved except the scene beyond the doorway, where his mother rushed happily among tangled old rose bushes and a farmland she had known as a child. She was smiling, and her eyes were bright with joy. Now, Emmanuel thought, I will change the universe that I have taken inside me. He regarded the geometric shapes and allowed them to fill up a little with matter. Across from him, the ratty blue couch that Elias prized began to warp away from plumb. Its lines changed. He had taken away the causality that guided it, and it stopped being a ratty blue couch with cough stains on it, and became instead a Heppelwhite cabinet with fine bone china plates and cups and saucers behind its doors. He restored a certain measure of time, and saw Elias Tate come and go about the room, enter and leave. He saw accretional layers laminated together in sequence along the linear time axis. The Heppelwhite cupboard remained for a short series of layers. It held its passive or off or rest mode, and then it was whisked over into its active or on or motion mode and joined the permanent world of the Phylogons, participating now in all those of its class that had come before. In his projected world brain, the Heppelwhite cabinet and its bone china pieces became incorporated into true reality forever. It would now undergo no more changes, and no one would see it but he. It was, to everyone else, in the past. He completed the transform with the formulary of Hermes Trismegistus. Verum est, quos superius est, sicut quod inferius, et quod inferius est sicut quod superius, ad perpetrando miracula rei unius. That is, the truth is that what is above is like what is below, and what is below is like what is above, to accomplish the miracles of the one thing. This was the Emerald Tablet, presented to Maria Prophetissa, the sister of Moses, by Tehuti himself, who gave names to all created things in the beginning, before he was expelled from the palm tree garden. That which was below, his own brain, the microcosm, had become the macrocosm, and inside him, as microcosm now, he contained the macrocosm, which is to say, what is above. I now occupy the entire universe, Emmanuel realized. I am now everywhere, equally. Therefore, I have become Adam Kadmon, the first man. Motion along the three spatial axes was impossible for him because he was already wherever he wished to go. The only motion possible for him or for changing reality lay along the temporal axis. He sat contemplating the world of the Phylogons, billions of them in process, continually growing and completing themselves, driven by the dialectic that underlay all transformation. It pleased him. The sight of the interconnected network of Phylogons was beautiful to behold. This was the cosmos of Pythagoras, the harmonious
fitting together of all things, each in its right way, and each imperishable. I see now what Plotinus saw, he realized. But more than that, I have rejoined the sundered realms within me. I have restored the Shekinah to Ensof, but only for a little while, and only locally, only in microform. It would return to what it had been as soon as he released it.
Just thinking, he said aloud.
Elias came into the room, saying as he came, What are you doing, Manny?
Causality had been reversed. He had done what Zina could do, make time run backward.
He laughed in delight and heard the sound of bells.
I saw Chinvat, Emmanuel said, the narrow bridge. I could have crossed it.
You must not do that, Elias said.
Emmanuel said,
What do the bells mean? Bells ringing far off.
When you hear the distant bells, it means that the Saushunt is present.
The Savior, Emmanuel said. Who is the Savior, Elias?
It must be yourself.
Sometimes I despair of remembering. He could still hear the bells, very far off, ringing slowly, blown, he knew, by the desert wind. It was the desert itself speaking to him. The desert, by means of the bells, was trying to remind him. To Elias, he said, Who am I?
I can't say.
But you know, Elias nodded. You could make everything very simple, Emmanuel said, by saying.
You must say it yourself, Elias said. When the time comes, you will know, and you will say it.
I am,
the boy said hesitantly. Elias smiled.
She had heard the voice issue forth from her own womb. For a time she felt afraid, and then she felt sad. Sometimes she cried, and still the nausea continued. It never let up. I don't recall reading about that in the Bible, she thought. Mary being afflicted with morning sickness. I'll probably get edema and stretch marks. I don't remember reading about that either. It would make a good graffito on some wall, she said to herself. The Virgin Mary had stretch marks. She fixed herself a little meal of synthetic lamb and green beans. Seated alone at her table, she gazed out listlessly through the dome's port at the landscape.
I really should clean up this place, she realized, before Elias and Herb come back. In fact, I should make a list of what I have to do.
Most of all, she thought, I have to understand this situation. He is already inside me. It has happened. I need another wig, she decided, for the trip. A better one. I think I'll try out a blonde one that's longer. Goddamn chemo, she thought. If the ailment doesn't kill you, the therapy will. The remedy, she thought acidly, is worse than the malady.
Look, I turned it around.
God, I feel sick. And then, as she picked at her plate of cold, synthetic food, a strange idea came to her.
What if this is a maneuver by the Clems, she said to herself.
We invaded their planet, now they're fighting back. They figured out what our conception of God involves. They're simulating that conception. I wish mine was simulated, she ruminated.
But to get back to the point, she said to herself, they read our minds or study our books. Never mind how they did it, and they fake us out. So what I have inside me is a computer terminal or something, a glorified radio. I can see me going through immigration.
Anything to declare, miss?
Only a radio.
Well, she thought, where is this radio? I don't see any radio. Well, you have to look real hard. No, she thought,
It's a matter for customs, not immigration.
What is the declared value of this radio, miss?
That would be hard to say, she answered in her mind. You're not going to believe me, but it's one of a kind. You don't see radios like this every day. I should probably pray, she decided. Yeah, she said. Myself, I am weak and sick and afraid, and I really don't want to be involved in this. Contraband, she thought. I'm going to smuggle in contraband.
Lady, come with me. We're going to conduct a complete body search. The matron will be in here in a minute. Just sit down and read a magazine.
I'll tell them it's an outrage, she thought.
What a surprise, feigned amazement. I have what inside me?
You're kidding.
No, I have no idea how it got there.
Will wonders never cease? A strange lethargy came over her. A kind of hypnagogic state, even as she sat reflexively eating.
The embryo inside her had begun to unfold a picture before her, a view by a mind totally different from hers. She realized, this is how they will view it, the powers of the world. What she saw through their eyes was a monster. The Christian Islamic Church and the scientific legate, their fear did not resemble her fear. Hers had to do with effort and danger, with what was required of her. But they, she saw them consulting Big Noodle, the AI system that processed Earth's information, the vast artificial intelligence on which the government relied. Big Noodle, after analyzing the data, informed the authorities that something sinister had been smuggled past immigration and onto Earth. She felt their recoil, their aversion. Incredible, she thought, to see the Lord of the universe through their eyes, to see him as foreign. How could the Lord who created everything be a foreign thing? They are not in his image, then, she realized. This is what Yah is telling me. I always assumed, we were always taught, that man is the image of God. It is like calling to like. Then they really believe in themselves. They sincerely do not understand. The monster from outer space, she thought. We must be on guard perpetually, lest it show up and sneak through immigration. How deranged they are! How far off the mark! Then they would kill my baby, she thought. It is impossible, but it is true. And no one could make them understand what they had done. The Sanhedrin thought the same way, she said to herself, about Jesus. This is another zealot. She shut her eyes. They are living in a cheap horror film, she thought. There is something wrong when you fear little children, when you view them, any one of them, as weird and awful. I don't want this insight, she said to herself, drawing back in aversion. Take it away, please. I've seen enough. I understand. She thought, this is why it has to be done, because they see as they do. They pray, they make decisions, they shield their world, they keep out hostile intrusions. To them, this is a hostile intrusion. They are demented. They would kill the God who made them. No rational thing does that. Christ did not die on the cross to render men spotless. He was crucified because they were crazy. They saw, as I see now, it is a vista of lunacy. They think they are doing the right thing.